Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
All right, well, I am joined in studio by Tony O'Reilly and by Declan Lynch to talk about their new book, Tony 10, The Astonishing Story of the Postman Who Gambled 10 Million Euro. Thanks a lot for coming in, Tony, and Declan as well. It's a quite frankly remarkable and frightening tale, Tony. You're a postman in Gorey. You end up stealing 1.7 million euro from Ompus to fund your gambling addiction, an addiction that ultimately sees you gambling over 10 million euro and spending 18 months in jail. I describe it as frightening. It's like reading a thriller at times. I felt my chest tightening while reading it as your habits started to take hold. You've been sort of doing the rounds for the last couple of weeks. How have you found this whole experience of going out and about and telling people your story and letting them into that part of your life?
Ups and downs, really. It's some ups, some downs. It was kind of, I found it at the start, it was good, but then it started getting on top of me a little bit, and because I was in the middle of doing my thesis as well for college, so the timing of it wasn't great. But I found that I was up in Carrickfergus last Monday week, and I felt that going back to the place where I was discovered, that had a kind of a huge effect on me. It didn't register with me, but kind of reflecting back on that the following day, it took a lot of me emotionally and mentally and physically as well. There's been a lot of positivity, a lot of good reaction to it. Because my ultimate goal from doing this was to kind of create a little bit more awareness around gambling addiction and get kind of my side of the story out there, just to kind of highlight what a big problem it is in Ireland.
Yeah, we might get into your side of the story and how all this happened, because I guess for a lot of people, when they remember your court case, and it was mainstream news at the time of how somebody was able to steal and get away with taking 1.75 million over a considerable period of time from Ompus, and sort of people move on with their lives and don't really think about it. Where did it all start then? It ends in Carrickfergus. We will get to Carrickfergus and ultimately when you're found by your family and it's all come out. Your first ever bet, was that?
In 1998, the 4th of July, the quarterfinal of the World Cups in France, Argentina against Holland. I was working in a bar in Carlow at the time, and there was a Paddy Power office down the back stairs. So I was in behind the counter, and was a customer at the bar having a few drinks and waiting for the match to kick off, and he was going down to place a bet. I was on my lunch break, so I said I'd go down to have a kind of look and might place a bet myself.
What age are you?
24. So I was late enough starting in comparison to kind of some of the stories you would hear nowadays of people. Online wasn't a huge thing back then either. So I went down and I fancied Patrick Kluivert to score first. And we were looking at the boards, and we just spotted a bet that if Kluivert score first and Holland win 2-1, was 45-1. So we put a pound each on it, and he had a few more bets. That was the only bet I had that day. So I went back up to the bar, and the match kicked off about 3:30, I think. And then Kluivert scored after 12 minutes, so a bit of the bet was up. So I was kind of a little bit more involved. And then Lopez for Argentina equalised. And then the next 70 minutes, then it was kind of that feeling of I kicked every ball, headed every ball, and it was that buzz that you often hear associated with people on top of gambling, the first bet. And then when Bergkamp scored that wonder goal, it was kind of...
Frank de Boer's pass, yes, Bergkamp scores, yeah. Holland win the game 2-1.
Yeah, and it was like, that was the start for me. I remember going to bed that night, and we had a few drinks that evening, and I had to go to a wedding, and I went to bed that night thinking, geez, this was easy. And this is an easy way to win nearly what would have been half a week's wages at the time for me, working in the bar.
Yeah, you were at a stage where you just liked watching sport. So you would have been able to sit down and watch a game like that. It's a game people will remember, one of the greatest goals of all time, and actually just enjoy it ordinarily for what it was. You didn't need to have the bet to have the interest in sport. It was just something that rather quickly developed then, was it?
It developed slowly enough. I started doing soccer accumulators most Saturdays, and it kind of took a different kind of direction when I opened up my online account in 2003. Again,
so that's still 5 years.
Still, later. Yeah, it was.
So you're heading towards your 30s.
Yeah, and I opened up an online account. I got a present of a voucher, and I had to associate a credit card with it at the time. It's not like today where you can lodge money in over the counter with your cards or whatever they have. It was, I had to associate a credit card with it. So I found that the ease of being able to put on a bet kind of really sucked me in that a little bit more. You're able to gamble from, I had a PC in my room. I was able to gamble from the comfort of the room, and on a range of different sporting events, or And that's when I started taking a little bit, I started gambling a little bit more frequently and on different things I would never have gambled before. You know, usually it was just soccer before that. It was just the accumulator.
What you knew.
Yeah, what I knew. And there was some, I did get some accumulators up. But it never really affected because it was only a fiver or a tenner each week and I was working at the time. But when I...
And was that a social thing? Was that...
It would have been, yeah.
Were you still working in the pub?
I would have worked more Saturdays in the pub. And it was a social thing. It was kind of, you'd watch the results coming in the afternoon. It was great crack. It was, and, you know, a couple of us would have bets on. We'd be chatting about it. But I think with the online thing, was kind of done from the room. It was kind of, I started isolating a bit more of my bets. I started kind of betting a little bit more frequently. And, you know, the bet that kind of really stands out for me online was that the 50 euro double with Bobby Zamora and CSK Moscow. That was the one that kind of brought it to a different level altogether.
How much did you win?
4,950, I think, at the time. And then it was kind of like, you're thinking this is easy. But I think it's a different type of bet because it's done on, you're kind of making a kind of a judgment call on it because I've been watching CSK Moscow during the whole competition, again, as a fan of soccer. And, you know, Bobby Zamora, I thought, was kind of playing well and a good price or a good option to maybe score first. And then when that came in, then it was that it kind of just brought it to a different level. Now, I did withdraw some of the money at the time, as I was at the start of my online. I was withdrawing money back off the card or back onto my credit card. But that was the one that kind of really kind of brought it to another level altogether.
And where are you in your personal life at this stage?
I was working away. I was full time on post. I was working in Carlo. I think I was in the middle of actually doing my diploma in first line management. So I had kind of that drive in me as well to try and move up the ranks through on post. And I was in a good place. You know, we'd bought a house. Everything was good in my life, you know.
So what changes with that bet, that double, where you get almost 5,000 euro? You say you withdraw some of that money.
I can't recall exactly much, but you
really did that suddenly give you a burst of confidence in yourself that actually, wow, maybe I can do what nobody else can, and yeah, maybe I can beat the bookies?
It's like that easy money. It's like you think I can do stuff with this. I can do stuff that I might be able to do. And again,
and did you do stuff? Did you withdraw 2-3 grand when you had have a good win and go on holidays or go away to a nice hotel or go for a meal?
At the start, yes, but as it went on, no. At the start, it would have been kind of sporadic kind of withdrawals back onto the card. Again, it was just to clear the card again. But what would happen would be that you'd still end up taking, you know, the money would go back on eventually. So it was only a short term thing where you're putting the money back on. But I can't recall really going on that many holidays back then. I remember going to Barcelona, I think, in 2005, and then there was the wedding in 2007. But other than that, there wasn't that many holidays. There wasn't that lavish lifestyle from the money, from the winnings. It would be more, it was a means of to win more. And you'd often hear nowadays when I'm in kind of meetings and stuff that a gambler, when is enough? And the answer is never. So it was never enough, the amounts I won. You always wanted that more. You just wanted more.
How did it escalate then? How quickly do you go from a 50 euro double working your way up to betting 1,000 euro or 2,000 euro? Is that something that happens in a matter of weeks or months?
It kind of went over probably two or three year period where I had maxed out credit cards and then got loans to clear off the credit cards to gamble again. And I repeated that process a good few times in that my loans and outgoings were kind of racking up over the years, as was my gambling was getting heavier, trying to win back money to pay off these loans. So it was kind of like that vicious circle. And to the point where I got the job, the manager's job in Gorey in 2009, and I didn't know whether I was going to be able to take the job because I had no way of, I kind of exhausted all means of borrowing at that stage. I was maxed out in a few different financial institutions, and I didn't know whether I was going to be able to get another loan to buy a second car because there was no public transport to Gorey. So it had kind of, my outgoings of loan repayments have got pretty high with 3 or 4 different loans. And then we were expecting to have our child then, and I knew that when my wife was going to be going on maternity leave, she wasn't going to be getting paid. So I knew that I'd have to take on the full mortgage. And that's when things started to get a bit dark for me, because I kind of felt the walls were closing in, because how was I going to be able to afford to pay off the mortgage, pay the bills.
So it wasn't just
and
you.
Repayments. Yeah, exactly. And then then, you know, the thoughts come in, how am I going to get out of this? Because I can't come clean saying I have all these escalating debts. So then I started doing something that I would never have dreamed of doing before that. I started taking money, justifying it, saying I've got these big wins before, this €50 bet to 5,000. If I put a little bit more on, I can win more and pay off these debts and get back to zero.
Yeah, so you're borrowing money from a very early stage, yeah, and taking out loans. The other thing that's striking right from the start is the secrecy,
yeah,
involved in all this. At no stage really during any of your betting, once you get past that accumulator on a Saturday afternoon when you're having a bit of crack, does anybody know anything that is going on?
No, people would have known that I had a bet. People known that I had accumulators, because you do let a little bit of information out, because you can't totally hide the fact that you're gambling, like if you're going out to the bookies or if you're on the laptop on the websites. So I would have let a little bit of information out, like the time I won the Bobby Zamora and CSK Moscow bet, I would have told people I won a couple of €100 and let a little bit out, so that you're allowing them to see that you are gambling, but you never let them see the scale or the amounts that you're gambling.
And you're allowing yourself the relief of being able to enjoy
exactly,
the
it's nearly, yeah, exactly. So it's like the story that kind of sticks out to me most is the time when Man United were playing Barcelona Champions League final, and I backed Rooney and Messi both to score in 90 minutes, and I was sitting in the snug with a few lads, we were out watching it, and I think United scored first and Rooney scored, and I kind of celebrated, and they were kind of going, you're not a United fan, why are you kind of celebrating this? And I would have been known to be following Barcelona as well as Liverpool, and then when Messi scored I celebrated again, and they kind of said, why are you celebrating both goals? So I had to explain to them that I'd put €50 on this double, and they thought it was all great, and I bought a round of drinks over, so I let a little bit out, but really I had I think it was €1,000 I had on it.
Yeah. So are you happy at this stage of your life when the amounts you're betting are still relatively within control, even if you've taken a couple of loans out? Are there parts of your life you're happy with?
It's like it's like you're living two different lives. Parts were happy, there was moments when I was happy and content, but usually it was always the darkness around me, was that, how am I going to get out of this? How am I going to fix this? You know, like the debts were crippling, and even when I started stealing money, it was like, how am I going to get this money back? Mm. How am I going to, without coming clean, without saying, hands up, I have a problem? And that's what it is with gambling addiction. You don't, you know, with alcohol or drugs, there's physical symptoms that people can see, that people are, you can see it. And with gambling, there's no, it's like the hidden disease. There's no physical signs that you're struggling with it. So there was moments, yeah, where you kind of feel I'm not too bad, but I think the majority of the time I was just nearly dying inside, really.
I don't want to say you're in control, say, when you're having that bet on the Champions League final, but you're betting on a sport that you've played and that you're interested in and that you have a decent knowledge of. Mm. Declan has a line in the book that eventually you're just betting on things because they exist at that moment in time. Yeah. When does that kick in?
It kicked in, I think, online, and when it became more of a problem for me, because it's the next available thing.
So you what know, we're talking about is, and I think Declan's written about this in his own book, in Free Money, of 4 o'clock in the morning, a random football
it's
game
anything,
in South America, or tennis, you name it.
And even when that's finished, there's these online games. I remember there was this online stock exchange where I was gambling €1,000 spin whether the figure would end up over 0.0001 or below 0.001. So like when the sports betting was finished for the evening, I went to something else that I could get that, you know, to try win money back, or to try, you know, get your need met of placing that bet. So
the most striking part of when you start taking money from on post is, well, probably that's not striking at all. It's almost done in a sort of nonchalant manner, it feels, certainly from reading the book, that I gamble, I need the money, the money's there, I'm going to take it. Why wouldn't I take it? That it didn't feel as if it was this pivotal turning point in your story that suddenly now everything had changed because you'd started taking a few quid from on post.
I justified it. I justified it in my own head, which looking back now, it's complete madness.
Mm.
But I justified it then saying, I'll borrow this. I looked at it as borrowing, which it wasn't. It was stealing, and you can't butter that up. But it would have been that I said, well, I can take a little bit of money here and I'll win it back and put it back in, and then have some more money to bet to pay off these loans. But that didn't, like, you know, with a gambling addiction, you're trying to gamble your way out of a problem that was created by gambling, in as much as you can drink your way out of an alcohol problem. But there was a point where it kind of, I had taken 8,000 at the time, and I kind of had this kind of, you know, this moment of kind of clarity within all the madness, saying, "Oh, this is wrong. This is." So I'd asked my mother, "Would she get a loan of 8,000?" Mm. And I'd pay back the repayments, and I go guarantor on her from the job, and with the real intention of paying that back in, but I got through the audit that time, so I was left. I'd hidden the money well enough that I got through the audit, and I was left with 8,000 in my pocket, with all the intentions of putting it back in. But then I just said, "Well, hold on, I can turn this 8,000 into 16,000, and you just go on that madness again.
When you look back now, is there any amount of money you could have won that would have ever stopped it? That would have seen you go put the money back in, move on with your life?
There was a couple of times that 14 team accumulator that I nearly clicked. I probably would have tried to get it back in that stage. I probably would have got...
You were putting €1,750 to win a 14 team accumulator.
Try win the amount that I
and you very nearly actually did win. Yeah. 13 of the 14 came up.
Yeah, one team, let me know, Larkin.
To win €300,000.
Yeah. And I would have put it back in, but I think I would have got discovered even at that stage. I would have got discovered. So at very early stage, I knew I was going to be caught. But I think it's that mindset of a gambler to get back to zero. At least if I have to suffer the consequences of what I've done, and deservedly, you know, that I kind of even think, well, at least if I can get this back in, at least gambling hasn't bet me.
Yeah. Obviously, it's very unfortunate how it happens, but were you freakishly fortunate at the time that nobody copped it earlier on Pulse? Like, how do you get to a stage that it comes to, like, I think it's at 294,000 and you're texting your wife saying, "I'm sorry, you presume that this time the auditors come." You're a manager in a pretty reasonably sized on post office, so there's regular checks.
Yeah.
How does it get to a stage that nobody notices that there's that amount of money missing?
I honestly thought that at that time, that Christmas 2010, I thought that was it. From then till June, till it was discovered, I was expecting a call any day. I was expecting a visit from the audit team, because I said that they're going to see there's a deficit in money, or a kind of a, the figures just don't add up. Mm. But they didn't call, so I kept gambling more and more, and probably from that stage I believe I lost my mind in some shape or form, because I was just gambling on anything. The amounts went silly, and it was just about, how can I get this 300,000 back?
Is that when the money, yeah, when essentially the numbers became meaningless?
It was just the number on top of a screen, on top of a, I think for a long time the kind of money was meaningless, or the numbers, not money was meaningless, but the numbers were meaningless, because it was only a figure at the top left hand corner of an online betting screen, so you didn't even feel real at the time. You were just seeing amounts, and you were saying, "I have to get this amount back in." So it was just always a means to try get the money back in.
Yeah. Are you talking to people at this stage? Do you ever at any stage feel like you want to tell? So you've texted your wife and said, "I'm sorry," just randomly out of the blue. Clearly she's going to ask questions as to why this comes.
I just said that I'm sorry. Like, there was obvious changes in my behaviour. I was under a lot of stress, so I just was apologising for how I'd been for the previous few weeks. Because when you're hiding that addiction, when you're hiding the fact that you're gambling and money, you do have a defensive. You're always on the defensive the whole time. You're always nearly arguing to get out gambling. You're nearly, if anything, your kind of tolerance levels are very low.
Yeah, what were you like at home at that stage?
I was up. You know, I was up. Sometimes I was down, I was isolating a lot of the time. Even within the family home, I was isolating a lot.
Yeah. You described it as a circular hell. That basically you woke up in the morning, you were betting, you weren't really sleeping. Mm. At any stage, did anybody from any betting company say no?
No.
So you're just saying, for people who haven't read the book, you're taking lumps of 5,000, 50 euro notes up to 5,000, and just walking in to a Paddy Power office next door, handing it over the counter, and they're putting that into your bank account.
I would have been at the very end, the end of the, or latter stages of it, I would have been handing, between gambling on events during the day, doing accumulators during the day, and putting large money into my online account, I would have been putting over 20,000 a day at least into, over the counters of two offices, and no one said, "No, where's this coming from?" And I know from working in a financial institution that if anyone comes in, you have money laundering procedures you have to adhere to. It was only after the fact, when everything discovered, that a staff member from one of the offices stopped me and just kind of said, like, "We thought it was an inheritance. We thought it was the Russian mafia," was the word used. "We thought it was you'd won the lottery. But even if that had been the case, there was still no one said, hold on, you're still gambling above, or you're still gambling huge amounts of money. No one ever said, stop, there's something wrong here. Even that morning when I lost the 462,000 in 12 hours, having won it over 4 days, there was never at any point did anyone say, hold on, you know, there's that kind of amount of money lost in 12-hour period.
Yeah, we might talk about that period because, so the losses are growing and the desperation to get it back is growing and you're having some success at one stage. Like chapter 13 of this book, everyone should read it. It's just almost it's a myriad of numbers and you get lost in the amount of bets that you're just simply putting on and winning and losing and winning and losing, but ultimately winning a little bit more. You get to 164,000. Back down to zero. You get 172,000 back down to zero. And then the biggest one, in the space of, 48 hours was it? You turned 5,000 euro into 462,000 euro.
It was over 4 days, I believe.
Over four days.
Yeah. And it was Friday evening and then was it Tuesday up to a Tuesday morning, yeah.
You go into work then that morning and the Paddy Power website isn't working.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most remarkable aspects and is that you get a phone call from Paddy Power himself giving you his personal phone number to say if you want to put any bets on, you can just call him and it will happen. You were also brought to corporate boxes as time went on as well. Did you ever ring him? Did you put bets on?
On a private number, no.
No.
Because the website came back on shortly afterwards.
Yeah,
the morning that happened, I arrived into work. And I knew I was on a bit of a high, if I'm being honest, because I'd won that amount over the weekend. I knew that I was.
So when you logged onto your Paddy Power account, there's 462,000 euro up to the corner.
Yeah. And I had taken 900,000 at that stage. So I was kind of thinking, I'm halfway there. If I can just double this up today, I'll have the money back.
How long did it take you to lose it?
12 hours. 31 bets with 29 losing bets, I think, when we were doing the research for the book.
Can you remember how you felt when you saw it was back down to zero?
Numb. Just it's hard to describe. It's hard to describe each time you talked about a few times it went down to zero. It's that kind of just numbing feeling of nearly, oh, here we go again. And it's hard to describe it. It's nearly like you feel like just dying. You feel like I want it all to end. You feel that way. And then even as Declan described in the book, the following morning or even that day, there's another lodgement of 5,000. So you start the whole madness again. And it gets so, you hear people with gambling addictions talk about, you nearly want to lose at some points because you just want to stop that cycle and get that break from your head for even a couple of hours because it's 24 hours a day. It's not just a sporting event. It's thinking about results. It's thinking about what bets she can play is how am I going to get money for gambling. So it just consumes your whole life. It's not just the actual betting event and that's it. When you're in that position of, it's different if you're gambling socially, if you don't have a problem with it, but when you're in that position, when it becomes a problem, it just consumes you. It really does.
Are you almost in a strange way when you have a weekend like that or 4 days like that almost gaining confidence that, yeah, I was able to do that. I was able to go and turn 5,000 euro into over 450 grand. That, what if I just go with another 5,000 euro? God knows what I can do.
That's it, exactly. You have this belief that you can do this over and over again. And that's what drives the behavior, drives the addictive behavior. Because you honestly believe, I've done this once before, I can do it again. And that's what keeps driving you back to it. Even though looking back now, it is madness looking back now from where I am now 7 years on. But in that moment you truly believe you can get this money back. You truly believe you can do that weekend again, but bring it on to another day. You can just get that 12 hours, you can turn that into 12 hours of winning. You honestly you convince yourself you can do that.
We did make contact with Paddy Power Betfair today about their policies around problem gamblers, and they came back to say Paddy Power Betfair strongly committed to responsible gambling. We promote and provide market leading tools to help customers control their play. We engage proactively with customers showing signs of potential harm. We fund research and treatment for problem gambling. As a long standing policy, we do not discuss specific customer accounts, either past or present. There have been significant developments in our approach to responsible gambling since 2011. This is and will continue to be a key business priority as we systematically seek to enhance our approach to responsible gambling, which I think is a statement that they have given before around other interviews you've done. If that morning when you 462,000 euro in your bank account, in your Paddy Power account, the call was, we think you've got an issue here, we think you need to stop, would it have made any difference?
No, because I would have got over it. I would have said I don't have an issue. I would have convinced them and myself I didn't have a problem with it, because the main objective was get this money, get the rest of this money back. It was only really when I went to treatment that I realised there was a problem. And now, and looking back now, it's kind of the problem each day then was, how am I going to win enough money to pay it back? How am I going to get money to pay it? How am I going to hide this? You didn't
see. How much of your time is spent worrying about getting caught?
Nearly every minute of every day. Right. It was you were waiting in work, at home, you were waiting for phone calls, you were waiting for that knock on the door. For 6 months I was waiting for that knock on the door, for that phone call, for them, you know, to see the audit man coming down the yard on the CCTV footage, or the CCTV camera. You were waiting for that. I was constantly waiting for, you're living in that moment, you're living in that fear of, when is this going to happen?
Can you talk to us about then when you were finally caught? Because I said when I met you outside that, like, it felt almost, reading the book, like you were a fictional character. And part of it is because it's probably so well written, I think, by Declan. And you talk about that last day, it's almost like a Thelma and Louise moment. You just get in the car, you drive to Belfast. What was going through your head as you're leaving Gorey and you're getting in the car and the auditors are arriving into the post office?
Thousands of thoughts. Just get away from here, first of all. Just get as far away from the problem as I can. You know, everything went through your head. It was kind of like, it was nearly like an adrenaline rush again. This is it. It was like that Thelma and Louise moment. It was like, kind of just go. And to the fact that I nearly crashed the car on the way up, going over Humpback Bridge, I bounced from one side to another. It was thoughts of how did it come to this? What's going to happen? Should I end this? Should I end it all?
Did you seriously contemplate that?
I did, yeah. Yeah, there was.
And what convinced you to go on?
My daughter convinced me, it was always that belief that I had to face the consequences of what I'd done. In writing the book, I'm not looking for any sympathy for what I'd done. It's just to kind of highlight how it happened. But that's, for me, the driving force to keep going is that, you know, what good can come out of all of this? I didn't want to leave a legacy of the person who didn't stand up and take responsibility for a mistake he made, and just try come back from that. That was kind of the driving force as well. That was the driving force for the last 7 years, to try to get back and have some kind of life after all of this. But what stopped me in that moment would have been just thoughts that I couldn't do this to family, friends. I couldn't just kind of, you know, just not take responsibility, not kind of not be a man in my own eyes, and just kind of, you know, take whatever had to come. And it was just fleeting thoughts, it was fleeting moments. But I think that, you know, when I came back from the North, I said, right, I took full responsibility for what I'd done, and I paid the consequence for what I'd done, and that's, undeservedly so.
Yeah. You're in such a state, though, when you're getting to Belfast, in such a state of addiction. Like, you're going straight to the bookmakers even then.
Yeah, it was like that, you know, what kind of calms me, what helps me to kind of cope with stuff, which was gambling. I could have gone straight to the pub, I could have gone, you know, and drank, but it was that thing, this is the thing that settled me over the years, when the stress of what was happening. So I went straight to it. I changed over sterling, and I just went in. I nearly lost all the money in an afternoon of gambling again. And then I just drove to Carrickfergus then, just...
Which ultimately is where you're found and your family find you. When you're constantly thinking about being caught and constantly worrying about the consequences, what did you think was ultimately end up going to prison for 18 months?
Mm.
Is that along the lines of what you were expecting?
I was expecting longer, and to be honest, I probably deserved longer. I was told by the barristers had said to me that, you know, you're looking at between 5 and 7 years, and, you know, best case scenario, you're probably looking at 4 or 3, which was the case with 4. One suspended was 3 years, and I served 18 months and then came out and done community work for a year and a half then. But I knew when I was in Carrickfergus that I was going to go to prison for what I'd done. When I was in treatment, I had this in the background, knowing that this, I was going to go to prison. I accepted that, you know, this was something that was going to happen. Others around me, family members, friends, were convinced that it would be a suspended sentence. And but in a way that, you know, I'm glad that it happened the way it happened, because I did deserve to go to prison for what I'd done. I broke the law, I committed a crime, and I take responsibility for what I'd done. Maybe others would have maybe to look at their own responsibility, maybe Paddy Power look at their responsible gambling, as you said, that they have endeavoured to do so since 2011. But I would kind of question, if that's the case, why is there still so many cases we're hearing about in the media, if they put stuff in place, operation systems in place for the last 6 years? We're still hearing the same, you know, we're hearing stories of high profile GAA players, you're reading paper of employees who've defrauded their employers. And I suppose the one point I want to kind of make, even from the book, is the story. It's the amount of zeros at the end to make the story kind of a little bit different than others. But really, it's not the money that makes it. It's how it controls your life, and it could be the person in the street gambling their weekly wages, and how it affects them and their lives and their families, and the person on social welfare who are gambling the majority of that. So it's not about the amounts of money. I know that's what probably brings it to the fore, but it really is relative to how it affects the gambler. And like, I've been talking to a good few people who have contacted me since the book has been launched, saying that they can relate to so much of it. People who have gambling problems, that they can relate to so much of it.
Yeah, to be honest, I think that's why one of the reasons it's such a good read is that it just feels very familiar. Maybe it is that some of the games you're betting on, you can think about the match and you never think about the consequences it's having on other people. But also, the early patterns of betting, I would imagine, are what an awful lot of people do, whereby they win €1,000 and they take out €700 and suddenly they think, I have €300 to play with. Instead of betting a tenner, I'll bet £50. And then they have another win. And suddenly it escalates quite rapidly. Now, most people can control that. But clearly, there is a good percentage of the population that actually you just get carried away with that. Yeah. And Declan, I might bring you in here, because at the end, towards the end of the book, you talk about going back, working in Scrags and the pub, and kind of go, well, maybe this isn't the best thing to be doing, considering you're going to be back in that sort of environment where there's football on the TV, where people are going to be having a bet and talking about betting. But actually then, Declan, you sort of think, well, it doesn't really make a difference in this day and age where you are, whether you're in a pub or anywhere, because ultimately you can just go on your phone.
Yeah, like going way back to when we were talking about Tony opening the online account. Like, I don't think you can understate the difference that makes, right? That the online betting in itself, the way it escalates the whole business of gambling, right? That gambling has been going on for millions of years, right? But online gambling is new, and it has made everything different. It has made the possibilities far more dangerous. It has made the potential for self-destruction almost instant. You can do it in a weekend, you know. And I think there's still a lack of awareness of that, a huge lack of awareness of it, you know.
To be honest, I was surprised reading the book that you were able to put €5,000 in and just bet €5,000 straight away, or even if you had a lump sum in there that you could put that a bookmaker would take $15,000 on a football match straight up off you.
Yeah, look, you have a bunch of addictive activities going on here, right? First of all, like, the internet itself is kind of addictive, you know. Football is addictive. Football on television is addictive. Gambling is addictive, right? So you've got this, the punter is here at this confluence of all these addictive activities. And the miracle is that almost anyone is able to resist it, because if you have any vulnerability to this at all, you haven't a chance, really. I mean, they will get you. That's what has attracted me, or that has fascinated me about this from the start. Just the levels of danger that people are in so many ways. I mean, Tony being a perfect example of someone who had an ordinary good life, you know, and is a smart man with you know, real interest in football, was able to make judgments on things, you know, was able, you can see the early bets are actually quite kind of clever. And at the end of it, he's betting on these insane things, right? Simply because they're on at this moment in time. That, like, the degeneration is so extraordinary, and yet it's not extraordinary in a way. I mean, one thing leads to another, and it isn't all that sort of unusual, really. You can actually see it can happen, no problem, really. Mm. I think that's, for me, the fascinating thing about it.
You've been writing about gambling for a number of years now, and when did you release Free Money, the book?
Free Money was about 2009, and I remember thinking at the time...
Had you heard about Tony at the stage?
No. I remember thinking, I better get this book out quick because everybody's going to be on to this thing, right? That was like nearly 10 years ago. Tony's case was more, I think, 2011 or so. Yeah. And as soon as I saw it in the paper, I just wrote about it because... It had so many aspects of the stuff that I'd been interested in. Even the fact that he was gambling when he was on the run, you know, that he still thought that he could get it back, which is really a key.
Well, you won 50,000 euro at one stage, did you, when you were in Belfast? Are up on that?
I think it's up to 60-something thousand, as far as I'm
remembering. Yeah, there is this endless self-belief of the gambler. You know, the hole, there's no hole so deep that a gambler doesn't think that he'll be able to get out of it, right? Right to the end, right to the gates of hell, like, that's the belief. And I just thought there were so many things in Tony's story, including the ultimate, like, thing of going to jail. It blew a hole in the responsible gambling stuff, a massive hole. I mean, anyone who looked at that for a moment over the years would have regarded it as comedy anyway. It's just a joke, right?
But you've written about this so much. Is there a way a responsible gambling policy can work, can be implemented?
I would argue that sometimes it's used for the other purposes, to actually identify problem gamblers and exploit them further. We've seen cases in Britain in recent years whereby, you know, people who were getting into all sorts of trouble were instructed to, you know, staff were instructed to keep an eye on them, maybe, you know, for the wrong reason, right? And sometimes it depends just on staff themselves. Like, I mean, individual people in offices can be kind of benign and exercise a sort of a duty of care to some extent. They can say personally to people, you know, you're in a bit of trouble. I think you're relying on that to some extent. But in terms of the corporate responsibility, we're still seeing this stuff where we do not discuss individual cases. What other kind of cases are there? And in this particular case, for example, Tony has no objection to them discussing it. So what that means, in fact, is we are not talking about this for our own purposes. When you translate it from corporate lingo into English, right? The other aspect of it is that it kind of mirrors the way, I suppose, corporate Ireland and the corporate world in general behaves, which is that the individual takes the hit. You know, we saw it with the banks and everything. The guy down in Carlow, he'll be paying for it. Right, the corporation issues their statement, we do not discuss individual cases, you know, gets a bit embarrassed and moves on. You know, it issues its two-line statement, it moves on. The individual doesn't move on. The individual is left with it, right? So in an odd way, it shows that the kind of vulnerability of the individual who takes all the responsibility, who takes all the rap, and we has to listen to stuff about the nanny state and all this. And meanwhile, the great corporation just moves on.
Where are you now in your life?
I'm in a good place. I'm a qualified addiction counsellor. I'm working in a transition house in Dublin, helping homeless men who've come through various addiction centres around the country to kind of get back to independent living through key working and counselling. I'm working a lot with problem gamblers, and even when you're just talking about the responsible gambling, one particular fella last week before Cheltenham had anti-post bets on, and we had discussed ways and means of how to avoid the traps of Cheltenham in the week that was in it, and he had contacted the betting company that he had with it. It was only €35, a Trixie and a double, I think he said, and the betting company sent back this pasted stuff on an email saying that our policy is not to cancel bets. Like, he didn't even want the money back, he just wanted to cancel bet because he was feeling that if he knew the bet was still valid, he'd be thinking about it. And they wouldn't cancel it for him. that they said we can't do this. If the bet comes up, the money will be lodged into the relevant account that you have associated with this. So that was a bit, that kind of was a bit frightening for me to hear that, in that you can work, you're working with people trying to help them through their addiction, and you know the bookmakers are really working against you, in you know, indirectly they're working against you. And even with the people on the coalface, people in the offices, another bookmaker's policy is to, if someone goes in to self-exclude, they'll tell them to come back in 24 hours to think about it, to come back in 24 hours. That's their policy. That's what they train their staff to do. So they're talking about responsible gambling, but I feel there's a lot of lip service being paid towards it. But back to myself, I'm in a good place. I'm gambling is not a part of my life anymore. I work hard to keep it that way. I'm enjoying, as we discussed earlier on, I'm enjoying watching soccer again. And that took a few years to do. I remember watching the final of the Capital One Cup in 2012 when Liverpool bet Cardiff, I think, on penalties. And I was just numb watching it. There was no emotion watching it. But I'm back enjoying life. I'm in a good place. I still have my problems, my issues, but I cope with them differently now. I can reach out. I have a network of people of support that I reach out to. So when I'm going through, you know, what life throws at us, I'm able to cope a lot better. And I'm very aware of all behaviours coming back in that could bring me back to gambling, because it's there. It's there waiting for me, you know, to kind of, if I allow myself, it's there waiting for me to fall back into as well. So I'm not naive enough to think that it's not a problem that could come back.
Yeah.
So I work very hard to keep it that way.
Well, it's great that you have somehow come through the other side. And thanks a lot for joining us in the studio. Declan,
thanks,
you as well. I'm sure we'll talk to you again soon. The book, Tony 10, The Astonishing Story of the Postman Who Gambled €10 million and Lost It All, is out now. It is a book, I think, that, well, anybody who gambles should certainly read. But for everybody, it's such an interesting book about gambling and where we're going with online gambling in particular. We'll take a quick break.
Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.